So, good morning everybody. Welcome to another lecture on compact star physics. So the last time we talked about dense matter. Any questions about we discussing about dense matter? Yeah, we were looking at the equation of state and we were looking at the free Fermi gas of neutrons or any particles and polytropes. And today we start a new section. And if you would ask me, if I would pick out just one chapter which you should remember and forget all about the other chapters, then it would be this chapter, chapter 4. So if you just remember chapter 4, then I have achieved something because you have probably remembered one of the most important stuff on compact star physics. And that's why the title of this chapter is simply compact stars. Yeah. Okay, so let's start. So first, we have all the ingredients we have to calculate compact stars. We have GR, the Toff equation, the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation. We know what an equation of state is. We put both together, we solve it, and we get something out. Yeah? In particular, the mass radius relation of a compact star. So first, we need to discuss spheres in hydrostatic equilibrium. So you know, probably know what hydrostatic equilibrium means for stars. Who has been listening to astronomy 1 or 2? Yeah, so you know what hydrostatic equilibrium means for the sun, for example. Yeah?
Yeah, it's basically when radiation pressure equals to the gravitational inwards pull.
Right, so that's the balance of the pressure which is exerted by the matter, which pushes matter outwards, and the inward pull of gravity, and they are each in balance. So let's look at the sphere in hydrostatic equilibrium. So we have a total sphere of radius r, yeah, and a total mass m. Okay. And we look at how the mass increases with the radius. So we have seen this is the continuity equation. So this is just an integral over the sphere, d3r prime, over the mass density. Yeah? And we're just doing it now in Newtonian physics. Yeah, we know if you go to gr, we have to replace it with the energy density. But I want to derive first, very simple, what hydrostatic equilibrium means. We can recast the whole thing also in a differential equation. This means if we add one mass element in a certain shell of thickness delta r, then this is just 4 pi r squared times the mass density at the point r. Yeah, so rho is the mass density. And it's sure that we have a profile, so rho is not constant, but changes as a function of r. And also the pressure changes as a function of r. So, and we have boundary conditions. We assume that m at the center is 0. You can think of cases where this is not the case. That you start initially, so you have some plop of some other stuff at the center, and then some outwards halo. Then in principle, you could start with a different number. But in ordinary cases, m in the center is 0. Yeah? And the total mass the total mass is, of course, m of small r being capital R, and this we denote usually as a capital M for the total mass of the star. Yeah? Okay. Boundary, actually we only have one boundary condition, right? This is one boundary condition we have.
And shouldn't you integrate from 0 to R?
Where?
Because 0 is a big R which stands for the entire radius of the star. The integral for the mass.
Mm-hmm. Ah, thank you, yes. Yes, thanks. Okay, now let's do the following assumption. We want to derive now hydrostatic equilibrium. So we assume that this is an hydrostatic equilibrium. We just add a mass. Add a mass element on top. On top of the sphere. Yeah, so in principle, I can put something like this, which I say this is my delta M, and this has the area A. And I'm being quite specific here, unspecific, so it could be any area, just a small blob, a cylinder, or a whole shell. It doesn't really matter. A drops out eventually. So then the mass we added, dm of R, is just the area A times rho of R times dr, yeah, delta R. Okay. So now we have additional pull of gravity and an additional pull of additional contribution from the pressure. Additional pull of gravity. Which we call dF gravity at a function of R. And here we just use Newton's law. So this is minus G. M contained within the radius R, yeah, times the delta M over R squared. Yeah. Okay. Good. And this we can rewrite, so dFg is equal minus g m of r a rho of r dr over r squared. Yeah, just putting in the other equation we have here. Dm is a rho dr. Nothing else happened. So now we need the pressure. Pressure force in quotation marks. So this is dFP of R is given by A times dP of R. Yeah, pressure times area, that's a force, a Newtonian force. And that should be in balance with the gravitational force. So, balance of forces . So we have dFP is equal ADP is equal minus G M of R A rho of R over R squared dr is equal dFG. Okay. Good. Now we see that the area drops out. We put dr to the other side. dp over dr is equal minus g m of r rho of r over r squared. Okay, and that's the equation of hydrostatic equilibrium. Yeah, this is Newtonian physics, so this is the equation which is used to describe the star, for example, our sun, or other objects we have at hand. Questions? Okay. Now we're coming to GR. So in GR, we know we have to do the following. We have to replace rho of R with epsilon of R plus other GR corrections. Yeah. And the other GR corrections that we still have an ideal fluid. Yeah. So ideal fluid in Newton, we can also write an ideal fluid T mu nu is equal P plus rho u nu plus eta mu nu times pressure, where eta mu nu is the energy moment, metric in flat space-time, and in GR, we say T mu nu is equal P plus epsilon u nu plus the pressure, and now with the full metric of curved space-time, G mu nu. So basically, one GR correction is, of course, for example, that we replace the flat metric with a curved metric, with a generalized curved metric. So, okay. Yeah, so in Newton we have energy momentum conservation. So we have partial derivative of T mu nu is equal zero. This is actually the defining equation for hydrodynamics. So this is hydrodynamics. Relativistic hydrodynamics is just written by this one formula using this ansatz for the ideal fluid plus corrections maybe you have from viscosity and so on.
The
question
behind the P plus P, what is the missing symbol?
That's G.
Ah, that's G.
That's G mu nu. So in GR, we have to use instead the covariant derivative of T mu nu equals zero. So, and that's it. And then we solve the Einstein equations instead of the Laplace equation. And then finally, we end up with the equation in hydrostatic equilibrium, which is just a tough equation. dP over dr is minus g m of r epsilon of r over r squared. This is the standard term we see also in the Newtonian case, except for this small subtle detail here. And then we have three correction factors. One comes from the pressure. So the pressure also adds up to this mass density, so to say, in GR. And we have another term which gives a contribution to this mass contained within the radius R. 4 pi R, what is it, cubed? No, squared. P over M. Oh, cubed. R cubed. R cubed. And the correction factor from the Schwarzschild radius, 1 minus 2 gm over r to the power minus 1.
So yeah. Is that the Toff equation?
That's the Toff equation. And we have derived this Toff equation before, yeah? So this is. Okay, we see that we have basically here three correction factors. These are the GR corrections. Yeah. And we also see when they are becoming important. So they will become important if the pressure is of comparable size and the energy density. So if the pressure is basically much, much smaller than the energy density, then basically this term and this term does not contribute much. In addition, we get also a modification if we have very compact objects which are close to the Schwarzschild radius. Okay? This is the correction factor from the compactness from the curvature of space-time. Otherwise, we can still use just the first part up to here for describing the sun, for example. We know that this correction factor is at a level of 10 to minus 9. This is what we computed, right? Effects from GR. From the compactness of the sun, 10 to minus or 10 to minus 6 at that level, so it's small. Good. Yeah. In addition, now we have to replace the mass conservation dm over dr. It's now given by 4 pi r squared epsilon of r. That is, so to say, conservation, mass conservation. Generalized mass conservation. Yeah, sometimes people say there are the Toff equations, meaning that you have the differential equation for the pressure gradient and the one for mass conservation. But usually when people write down the Toff equation, they just have this equation in mind and implicitly assume that one also has here the equation for mass conservation. Okay, as you can see, we only need one boundary condition here for the pressure. So we have to define basically the pressure at the center. So you get a family of solution depending on what is the boundary condition at r equal 0. So then one integrates outwards. So boundary condition. Conditions. So m at r equals 0 is 0, and the pressure at r equals 0 is the central pressure, p central. Yeah, so this gives a family of solution. Independence on as a function of the central pressure. Family of solutions.
Yeah. Where do I get that central pressure from?
That's the input.
Yes, but how do I know what to input? Like, do I just...
You have to guess.
Guess, okay.
Make an educated guess. And if you do the right guess, you find a stable solution. Otherwise.
Okay. Yeah.
And in addition, we need the equation of state to close the set of equations. A third one?
With E of big R being 0.
What is 0?
The energy density at R equals big R.
Not necessarily.
So we don't assume that there's no mass if we go out big R. because we assume that the mass is complete once we reach R.
Okay, then this is additional constraint. So you, in principle, okay, good. That's a good point. Yeah. So these are the boundary conditions, and everything can be solved. Now, where do I stop the integration is basically the question. If I have a fixed sphere and say, okay, I just have a fixed sphere and I have matter only up to a radius capital R, then of course the pressure outside should be zero and also the energy density should be zero outside. So in practice, what you do to calculate the total mass of a sphere, so now for a sphere, for a sphere, we define this to be the total mass of the star. And this is given by basically that the pressure at R equal R is equal zero, vanishes. Yeah. We will find actually cases where the energy density at the surface does not vanish. So it jumps from a certain value down to zero. This can happen. But the pressure is zero. Why? Because the pressure should be zero just by the hydrostatic equilibrium. If you go to vacuum, right, then really at the boundary here of the surface is defined where the pressure is zero. So basically, also the total mass of the star is defined at the radius capital R by integrating the equation outwards until the pressure vanishes. Yeah, so we integrate the equation. We start with the central pressure, integrate outwards. Eventually, the pressure will drop to zero, and this defines the mass. So if you look at the pressure profile, we have some central pressure. And then we integrate outwards, and then eventually it hits zero. And we know this is the radius capital R, which we define. Good. There are actually cases where we just have not a fixed sphere, where we have an infinite extension. And in principle, you can also solve the differential equation if you have a distribution or an equation of state, which it extends outwards to infinity. Can happen. So that basically capital R goes to infinity. So you have a halo around the star. And in principle, you can also apply the differential equation. But of course, not for compact stars, which are well-defined, have a well-defined radius, and then a well-defined mass. For example, if you consider the dark matter halo, in principle, you can also describe the dark matter halo being in hydrostatic equilibrium, but the dark matter halo extends to infinity. Yeah, and then basically, you have to stop somewhere and say, okay, that's the mass contained within the sphere, but still there's some small halo going on and on and on. We will discuss this when we discuss solutions for white dwarfs, the Lane-Endrum equation, which is used for white dwarfs, first by Chandrasekhar, has solutions which really show that this can be, that basically the halo extends to infinity. So, good. So let's find the first solution. So you put this onto the computer. That's differential equation of first order. This you just integrate by stepwise going outwards. You just integrate up the total mass of the star. So that's fairly easy to solve, more or less. The trick is always in the detail, but in principle it's fairly easy to solve. You can use Euler or Runge-Kutta. And as the first example, we use, of course, Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff used the free neutron gas. So we look at a solution for a free neutron gas, which is the first equation of state we just derived in the last chapter. Solution for a free neutron gas. Neutron Fermi gas at t equals zero. Yeah, and this was done, this was solved numerically by Oppenheimer and Volkoff in 1939's paper. Yeah. Good. So what you find is the following. Instead of the central pressure, I can also choose the central energy density. And then with the equation of state, I can compute the central pressure. So I can compute the following. Let's make this a big diagram, not too small. So I plot the mass, the total mass m, as a function of the central energy density in certain units. Energy density, and to have it dimensionless, I put a characteristic energy density. This is the energy density of nuclear matter. Of nuclear matter, nuclear matter, and this is m in solar masses. Okay, this is a linear plot, so we have 0.2, 0.4, 0.6, 0.8, 0.8, 0.2, 0.4, and so on. And then here I also plot the radius. Radius in kilometer, 10, 20, 30, 40. Yeah. And here I have a logarithmic plot, so this is 1 here. And here I'm already at 2, 4, 10 to 6. Okay. So what I find is the following curve. Maximum here. These are the stable solutions I find. So I crank up the central energy density. The educated guess is, of course, I should start somewhere around the characteristic energy density, which would be the one of nuclear matter, which I know from experiment. So I start around this value, and then I get this curve here. So the mass increases steadily up to a certain point. And then it decreases. And then you will find that it increases again and decreases again. So there's some oscillating pattern which is going on like this. This is the maximum mass you get. Which is around 0.7 solar masses. Okay. Now what is the radius doing? So we get two solutions, right? We get one for the total mass and one other one for the radius where the pressure vanishes. So this starts at around 30 kilometers, somewhere here, and goes down to this point here, here. And then it continues, and then it also starts to oscillate. But actually, the maximum is off, is shifted. That's important. So up to this point here. Okay. The radius you find for the maximum mass configuration is about 9 kilometers. Well, so that's the solution we find for free gas of neutrons by solving the Toff equation. Any questions how to solve this? So let's repeat it again. So you choose the central pressure or central energy density. You integrate this differential equation until the pressure vanishes. You find the radius capital R. At that point, you know what the total mass is within the sphere by integrating the mass conservation. And you can plot now the zero of the pressure, the radius, versus this integrated mass. And this would give then a mass-radius relation. Yeah? This is now a parameterized plot. And we can plot both together in a mass-radius diagram, like this. Mass versus radius. And then the whole thing looks like this. So you start, we start with large radius and small masses. So we start down here. And then the radius goes down and the mass goes up. So radius goes down, mass goes up. So it goes like this. Then we reach a maximum mass here with the corresponding radius. Then the mass goes down. And also the radius still goes down. So we go like this. What you find eventually is that the whole thing turns around and makes a spiral pattern like this. Again, here we have the maximum mass. Yeah, this was 0.7 solar masses and the radius here of 9 kilometers. So this is a spiral. We can also plot where we have black holes. Yeah, let's consider what is the Schwarzschild radius for one solar mass. We know it's 3 kilometers, right, for the sun, 3 kilometers. So this is 1/3 of this one. 1, 2, 1 here. So here we have black holes here. If you want, we can also plot the Buchdahl limit, which would be somewhere here. Yeah. Where we know that no equation of state can be to the left of that curve, Buchdahl limit. Yeah. Good. This is the mass radius relation for a neutron star. If you just assume there are no interactions in a neutron star, just neutrons, very simplified picture. We get the right ballpark. If we do more sophisticated calculations, we find actually that the radius is in this range around 10 kilometers. That's the typical radius for neutron stars. The masses, however, we find will be much, much larger, and that comes from interactions. So interactions, repulsive interactions, gives additional pressure or additional contribution to the pressure, and it pushes up the maximum mass to the observed values of around 2 solar masses. Okay. Good. Any questions about the mass radius relation? Yeah?
Is this the MIT Bragg equation of state, or is this a different one?
The question was, is this the MIT Bragg equation of state, or is this a different one? This is not the MIT Bragg equation of state, this is a different one. This is the one for free neutron gas. The MIT Bragg model we will discuss in this chapter also has a different form. So MIT Bragg model. This equation of state is given in a parameterized form for Fermi gas. It basically has these two different polytropes with 5/3 and 4/3. And the MIT Bragg model is just that the pressure is 1/3 times the energy density minus a Bragg constant. And by convention, this is 4 times the Bragg constant. So it's completely different.
Because I was asking, because it yields a very similar pattern in the mass radius prediction as the MIT Bragg.
Yeah, the statement was that it yields a similar mass radius relation as in the MIT Bragg model. We will see that the MIT Bragg model gives a different mass radius relation. Actually, what we will see is that it starts at zero and then will spiral upward like this. So the pattern will be different. The pattern here will be the same, maximum mass, and then the spiral will be the same. But it starts actually at zero at the origin, not at large R. We will come to this. Yeah. Any other questions, comments? Good. Then I have 10 more minutes and we can start discussing the origin of this maximum mass in very simple terms. So we're going back to simple arguments by Landau to show how to get an estimate on the maximum mass and the typical radius for a neutron star by using actually Newtonian arguments. Okay, let me erase this. So Landau's argument is very simple. So we just consider again a sphere of matter with radius r and total mass m. And we put a particle small m on top of it. So this has this mass small m. Yeah. Then we look at the total energy that that particle has. Of mass element m. So as a function of r, we have two contributions. We have the gravitational energy plus the kinetic energy. Yeah, the gravitational one is minus g, capital M, small m over r, over capital R, plus the kinetic energy. Okay. In general, the kinetic energy, the energy of a particle, is the one of a relativistic one. Okay. K squared plus m squared. Just see a typo here. So, and we have a characteristic momentum, which we can get by putting k equal kf. So the Fermi energy is when we have k equal kf, is square root of kf squared plus m squared. Yeah. Okay, we have a number density. Which we get by integrating over the Fermi sphere. So this is g over 6 pi squared Fermi momentum cubed. Yeah, for neutrons, we know what this degeneracy factor is. What is the degeneracy factor for neutrons? 2, right? From the two spin states. So now we look at the average quantities. So we define n bar, which is the number of particles per volume, which is 3 times n over 4 pi r cubed. N number of particles, number of neutrons. Then we can calculate the characteristic Fermi momentum. The characteristic Fermi momentum would then be 6 pi squared over g times n to the 1/3. Yeah? And then we replace this n with an n bar, basically an average k Fermi momentum. Yeah? I will omit the bars in the following. So this is then equal 9 pi over 2g to the 1/3 times n to the 1/3 over r. Yeah, the important thing is that it goes like n to the 1/3 over r, this Fermi momentum. Okay. So the total mass of the star, we simply assume that effects from interactions or from other terms are small, so the total mass of the star is just the number of particles times the mass of the individual particle. So we can plug this in now into our equation for the total energy. So the total energy as a function of R is then minus Gm m over R plus the Fermi momenta in the relativistic case, relativistic limit. And this is minus G n m squared over R, where I put in m is n times small m. And I put in the expression for the Fermi momentum from this equation here, plus 9 pi over 2g to the 1/3, n to the 1/3 over r. Okay. Good. Now we can start discussing. Let's make a plot. Again. As a function of r, e of r. Good, we have three cases. So first we say, okay, we start with a negative energy. Let's say energy is negative. So it's energy is negative. The whole thing goes like 1 over r. Yeah. So it goes like this, 1 over r. So here the energy is negative to start with. Okay. The other case, of course, if the energy is positive. And then we have something in between where the energy is zero, we have this limiting case. So, now what is happening if the energy is zero? So let's assume we start at this configuration here. Now we can minimize the energy of the system by letting the sphere shrink to zero. We gain more and more energy, so eventually the whole thing will collapse to a black hole. So we end up here in a black hole. Yeah. If we start somewhere here, the sphere will expand and by minimizing the energy. And eventually, we will reach a stable configuration. So how does this work? So in principle, I have been looking at the relativistic limit. In the non-relativistic limit, this term here changes. This one goes like kf squared over 2m. Yeah. So the whole thing will be proportional to kf squared, n to the 2/3 over r squared. N to the 2/3 over r squared. Yeah. This means eventually this term will dominate at large r and it will turn negative. So I should leave more space here. So this curve will go down like this. It will be negative. Yeah. So here's the relativistic limit. And here's the non-relativistic. However, if we go to R equal infinity, we know the whole thing goes to zero. So eventually, the whole thing should end up here at zero. This can only happen if we have a minimum and it goes up to zero. So in the case if the energy is larger than zero, we will find a stable minimum. A stable configuration. Yeah, so we find stable solutions. So if the energy is positive, we find stable solutions, always. If the energy is negative, we will always find a black hole. So there's a limiting case of stability, and that is for E equals zero. Yeah. So if you put this to zero, then we basically see the following, that, let me just give me a few more minutes, G n max times m squared is proportional to n to the 1/3 max. And you find basically a maximum mass, which is n max times the mass of the particle, which turns out to be proportional to the Planck mass cubed over the mass of the particle squared. Why is E equals zero the limiting case?
Because the curve that comes from E bigger than zero is the one that crosses zero, so the E equals zero case is in there, right?
That I don't understand. If you start with E equals zero, it will always be zero to start with. It's a zero times 1 over r, it will always be zero.
But then how can I cross the E equals zero part with that one curve? Like if that's a critical case, the upper curve wouldn't be able to actually cross it.
Yeah, here at a limiting case, I don't find a stable configuration. There's a crossing, yeah. Because I consider here the relativistic limit and not a non-relativistic one.
Okay. So,
yeah. Yeah, in principle you're right. So if I choose E equals zero, this only applies for the relativistic limit. Once I go to the non-relativistic limit, of course this changes somehow here, in this expression changes, and then the whole argument somehow is more subtle. But it just depends on the cases, initial cases. I start in the relativistic limit, and then I see that I can only have these three different cases. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There might be some funny wiggles happening here, but still, these are the limiting cases. Okay, I'm over my time. Any more questions about Landa's argument? Yeah, I just replaced the Planck mass cubed, comes just from this term G, which goes like to the 3/2, basically. So I get a Planck mass cubed. Yeah, by solving this one, I see that I have an n max to the 2/3. I take the whole equation to the power of 3/2, so I get the 3/2 here, which gives me the Planck mass cubed. And and then eventually there's a mass term missing, goes like 1 over m squared. I have this m here, right? So it goes in total like, not like 1 over m cubed, but 1 over m squared. Okay, so we will discuss further details about the Landa mass in the next lecture, next week. So I stop here and we continue with the exercises.